Thanks for joining us. We're looking at global markets and its impact towards investors. I have with me in the studio Patrick Chang, Chief Investment Officer of Principal Southeast Asia. A good friend of the show, actually. How are you, Patrick?
I'm good, thanks.
This Raya has brought about some interesting conversations across the relative table in terms of the common gossip and politics and all the other stuff. A lot of my relatives are talking about markets and how they should invest moving forward. We're looking at the world's second biggest economy, China, reopening. There is a possibility of a more dovish tone across the US as rate hikes on the horizon. Domestically, we're looking at the OPR meeting. Based on some of the analysts that I speak with, they're looking at OPR being maintained. I don't know what the house view of Principal Southeast Asia would be. What would be some of your take when it comes to the global markets and perhaps domestically as well? Are we looking at a more interesting time or more stability moving forward?
Yeah, since we spoke the last time, right, obviously markets have been a bit more choppy. We started the year in January very, very strongly, led by China. And then you fast forward in the last 3 months, a lot of exciting things have happened, right? And first and foremost, we've got volatility from in the US in terms of the mid-sized banks. Silicon Valley Bank was one of the key ones. Credit Suisse was all it. You know, I was in Hong Kong for the conference, and I can tell you the only thing they were talking about is, you know, do I still have a job, right? And so unemployment is one of the big key issues globally as well, right? But aside from all that noise, you know, the interesting part from my point of view, right, is that, you know, if you had to step away from all this in the last 3 months, the markets are actually up 8.7% in the US. The technology sector is up 16%. The rest of Asia is up close to about 5 to 6%. Malaysia, on the other hand, unfortunately, on the large cap space, is down by close to 4%. But if you take away the hood and you look underneath what is going on, the mid cap space in Malaysia is up by 6%, and the small cap space is up by 5%. IPOs have never been more hotter than it is in Malaysia time, right? So, in other words, what we're trying to say here is that there is money to be made in equities, and also at the same time, there's maybe money to be made in fixed income, which we can talk about a little bit later
as
well.
Of course, yeah, of course. It's also the graduation of some of the companies from the smaller markets, from the smaller boards to the big board as well. That's also quite encouraging, especially in the realm of manufacturing. That is where I would look at the real economic growth for the country. And all this does paint a picture of a promising growth story. However, the MSCI World Index has dropped 7% from the year high. We're looking at some surprise failures like the SVB Bank, for instance, or the Silicon Valley Bank. Does this kind of news kind of deter you from that whole notion of the countries or the world is heading in the right direction?
I mean, if you asked me about 3-4 weeks ago, when the height of all these things that happened, yes, I was worried. I mean, I'm not going to kid myself about that, right? But the world has basically moved on since then, right? Why? Because I think the Federal Reserve and the rest of the other central banks globally have decided that, look, we are going to basically still going to raise rates, but the language in which I'm hopeful, the language in which they're going to communicate to investors will start to change. And the direction of that is going to pivot a lot of investors towards either thinking about fixed income as a major asset allocation capability, or to think about areas like ASEAN, which is more defensive, or even Malaysia, for example, which, we, like I said early on, you know, IPO markets continue to be very, very buoyant, right? So I think, in a nutshell, what are we trying to say here, if you were to asset allocate this year itself, Principal's view is you got to go basically in Asia, underweight cash, buy equities, buy fixed income.
So it really doesn't matter whether or not the market is volatile or otherwise. It's about your strategy moving forward. And Principal is actually helping your investors in arranging this kind of asset allocation.
Absolutely.
Okay, we're also looking at some of the current economic landscape right now. The near-term concerns, such as the financial sector turbulence that we speak of just now, weaker corporate earnings coming out of the US, higher interest rates possibility, including that of the unemployment numbers in the US that might push Fed rates to be higher. Geopolitical uncertainties, I can go on and on about geopolitical uncertainties actually. Is now the right time to talk about fixed income then?
Absolutely right. So I think, you know, we just came out with our strategy note late last week. And basically, we've been pushing fixed income as a major asset allocation push towards people's money. Why? Because you've had a huge 450 basis points hike in the US. I think it's going to pause at some point this year.
Oh, wow. Right? Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
At some point. Maybe another 25 bips, you know. That's our central view. I think we have a potential recession coming on the horizon. Usually when recession comes, the Fed will start to think about pausing, hopefully, That's our central view. And I think if you take a 12 to 18 month view, I think you're going to get 5 to 6% yields in global market fixed income with capital gains of probably about 1.5% to 2%. You're going to get about a very decent return in a fixed income world. So in Malaysia itself, I think 5 to 6% is quite decent in a world where things are being, but still fairly choppy, like, you know.
Please correct my understanding if I'm wrong. Last year, we saw both capital markets, fixed income, as well as equities dropped across the board. Is this something that was not seen for quite some time?
Let me correct you.
Yeah, please.
Okay. In Asia itself, when you talk about fixed income, Malaysia in Asia was the second best performing bond market last year. Okay. Year to date, in the last 1 year, if you take 1 year from last year to now, we're up by close to 6% in government bonds in Malaysia.
This is ringgit?
Ringgit.
Okay.
Local currency bonds. Okay. Second best performing market. Of course, now if you extend that to emerging markets, the Turkeys and the Mexicos and all
then
that.
You have all the other.
Right. But you just think about it, just in the Asian fixed income world, for example, right? Malaysia has been a big performer. As we speak, a lot of foreign investors, although they've been shunning the Malaysian equity market for whatever reasons, right? They've been net buyers of the local government bonds. What that really tells you is people are thinking about asset allocating into yielding assets, which is our central view, because of taking advantage of, you know, one of the most unprecedented rate hikes that we've seen in history, right? Like over the last 1 year, right? By the Fed and so forth, right? And in Malaysia itself, it's a very easy story, right? Bank Negara, as you know, may or may not raise 25 basis points, right? Our central view is maybe they may not raise rates this year. Why? Because the economy, inflation, all that is not really a serious problem today, right? And you need to be
as initially thought, actually.
Yeah. But you know, like I said earlier on, right? If you remove the hood and you look underneath it, right? Post Lebaran and post Raya, for example, right? There could be a risk that consumption will start to slow down, economy will start to slow down, and so forth. Yes, we have a lot of foreign direct investments coming in, and that could be a tailwind for the economy as well, right? But underlying all this, we are still in kind of the world where neither hot nor too cold. So if I'm the central bank today, I would basically want to fuel the economy, right?
Yeah, of course.
Monetary policy is one tool.
But still within the domestic economy, there is an idea that the government is actually showing right now, and they're very aggressive in terms of rebranding MITI, adding the word investment into it.
Yep.
They're not just trying to attract foreign investors to come in. They're also trying to reinvigorate the domestic direct investments as well, or DDI. Do you feel that these kind of postulations are actually a good signal to the market that they're quite serious about trying to grow the economy domestically?
Absolutely, right. I mean, you've heard recently about the $170 billion of the Chinese money that potentially is going to be. These are approved long-term MOUs, right?
Yeah,
and,
but...
And it's still, of course...
I mean, on paper, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Of course, everybody's skeptical about it, right? My view is that it will take time to be approved to basically realize in terms of whatever, and then the multiplier packs will come and so forth, right? But if you take yourself away from this, right, why is the IPO market in Malaysia very, very hot? Because over the last 3 years, right, during the pandemic, right, we have been net beneficiaries of the supply chain moving out from China, whether it's EMS companies, whether it's IC design companies. I was just told by my analyst just now, right, when I was doing some research about how this whole FDI really works, right, Malaysia has been a biggest beneficiary of the semicon industry for the last 50 years. Yes, it is very low end. But moving beyond this 50-year history, what are they benefiting from? The companies or the MNCs, the Chinese companies and so forth, because of the China-US trade tensions that were happening, they have to relocate somewhere. Malaysia is now getting up the value chain in terms of IC design. What that really means is instead of just producing mass-produced chips, they are now starting to do more value-added products, which means doing the design for the end customers, for example. This is the advent, I think, of a longer-term trend for Malaysia. And as you attract more and more money into this area, people have more capacity to expand into R&D and so forth, right? And that will create us as a natural hub in technology itself. Now, granted, we are not Korea, we are not Taiwan, but at the end of the day, basically, basic stuff still make money, right?
Yeah, you know? And also jobs. Yeah. I have had two or three companies sitting where you are sitting right now. They are going to hire 4,000, 3,000 people in Pulau
right?
Bandar Baru and many more of these tech industry companies because they are moving away from China.
Yeah.
So because of this, you're very bullish about this domestic market right now, especially fixed income?
Fixed income, for sure, yeah. I think it's a no-brainer for now because you're going to get about 4.5% on yields. right? And you're going to get at least a capital gains of 1.5 to 2%. So net-net about 6 to 6.5% in a market where I think, you know,
it's
decent,
right? Slanting downwards,
So, and the dot plot is suggesting that as well in the US, right? So, you know, basically you look at the yield curve in the US, right? The dot plot is like this. The yields are all coming off already. People are already forecasting a recession.
Yeah.
So naturally, you know, if you look backwards to any recession, our central view is the recession will be a shallow one, hopefully, right? Even if it's a hard one, fixed income does well.
Yeah.
Right. So I think net-net, I think fixed income is a good safe haven.
Okay. We'll go for one short break before we continue on the conversation with Principal Southeast Asia. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Patrick Chang, the Chief Investment Officer of Principal Sites Asia. Let's look at Asia-Pacific, moving away from Malaysia. The World Bank has revised its world projection upward for China and Asia. Do you believe that the region has reached a turning point? Can you share with us some of the key drivers that you feel for this kind of optimism?
Yeah, so, you know, we had a very more decent reopening in China, and that happened in January, February after Chinese New Year. I think the momentum continues. If you look at some of the indicators, PMI numbers and services, 58.2. Anything above 50 is expansion. Manufacturing is a bit more lackluster, about 51.2, but generally still expanding. Our belief is that I think the momentum continues. The other key point that we look at in the Chinese economy is the housing market. Year on year, housing starts are up by 31%, although coming from a very, very low base. Mm-hmm. That is an indicator that confidence is coming back to the housing market. If you recall last year, they had a boom bust cycle, right? Everybody was, you know, worried about the property market in China. Mm. So I think these are clear signs that consumption is coming back through the services sector, and that people are getting more confidence in buying at least new properties out there, right? So I think China is on the mend. Now, if you move away from just China, as I spoke about earlier on, right? Korea and Taiwan had a nice, decent pop as well in terms of the market and economy as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because people are now taking a 12-month view that the pent-up demand on the chip businesses that we're talking about with all the whole issue about US-China tensions, right, are basically going to pop up a lot of demand in the Korean and Taiwanese space, right? Mm-hmm. I met up with recently with TSMC, for example, right? And that's the largest company.
You met them, okay.
Yeah, and yeah, I was in Hong Kong, right? And I can tell you, right, they have never been so, I would say, bullish on the cycle over the next 24 months, right? And it's astonishing when people are talking about recession. Right. Why? Because they have moved away from designing chips. You're talking about nanometers where, you know, your chat GPTs are using today. And they need to be very, very fast, right?
Yeah.
In case you don't realize as well, you know, the Americans as well have invited them to set up a plant in Arizona, right? And so they're diversifying also their supply chains. So I think net, you know, there are a lot of compelling stories in Asia.
Okay, I still want to focus a little bit more on Asia-Pacific and China. What about the geopolitical tensions that is currently happening in US and China? That whole notion of countries, including that of Malaysia, postulating that they want to break away from the dollar and try to transact or do settlements in renminbi or any other currencies within the transacting countries, basically trying to reduce reliance on not just US dollar, but US or the European nations per se. Is this a situation where we're looking at the world being split in two? There is a trade block, so-called, of sorts. Is that the direction that we're looking at? Or is this just business
I don't,
as usual?
I think you hit it on the nail, right? I don't think this China-US trade tension will go away anytime soon. It is going to be something that's going to be with us for a while, right? The world is going to be what I call bipolar, right? So to speak, right? And so that's the reality of it. But the net impact of this, when I think about Southeast Asia and pivoting to Southeast Asia, right, is that the net beneficiaries will be Southeast Asia. I think the China plus one story is real. Of course, it has tensions because China being a big taiko and a big, you know, economy down there will make sure that Southeast Asia is dependent on them. But likewise, I think the Southeast Asian countries like ASEAN, for example, will also make sure that they have a foot in the game. And that is, what are you going to benefit from it? Like I said early on, foreign direct investments. Never in my life have I seen 170 billion committed by China into Malaysia, for example, right?
Yeah.
That is one key example. It doesn't just stop in Malaysia. As we speak, for example, right? There are a lot of manufacturing companies also relocating, for example, to EV batteries because they have neat supply of nickel supply, for example, in Indonesia, right? As we speak, for example, in Thailand, for example, which is the biggest auto part manufacturing company in Southeast Asia is also benefiting from this, right? And then, of course, you've got Vietnam, right, which is the net beneficiary for a lot of Korean MNCs companies, right? The likes of Samsung, LGs, and so forth, right? So, collectively, if I look at some of the data that we're looking at now, foreign direct investments is not going to go away from China. So I think net-net, back to your question about China-US trade tensions, I don't think it's going to go away, but I don't think it's an end of the world as well.
No, I don't think so too. It's just trying to find that delta in terms of what the opportunities are for the investors. Yeah. Do you feel that the potential investment opportunities for investors are actually aplenty? You just need to know where to look at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Right. Still on ASEAN, moving from Asia Pacific to ASEAN, these kind of markets that you have highlighted, they also have a lot of challenges within it. Of course, we're looking at political risk, policy shift situations. Do you feel that these kind of risks are, I guess, quite pronounced? Or do you feel that for investors, if you know how to mitigate these kind of risks, it's actually quite okay for you guys to invest in these kind of markets?
Look, let's put it this way, right? Every single country in Asia will have certain amount of a degree of political risk in any change, right? Mm. Whether it's Malaysia, whether it's Thailand, whether it's Indonesia, for example. Mm. We're all going to... Thailand and Indonesia go for elections. Thailand more nearer, and next year it's Indonesia, right? Mm.
But I mean, think Malaysia as well for the state elections.
Yeah, state elections, right? So, but then again, people already start to anticipate this. That's why the markets are cooling off a little bit, right? But once all these event risks are happen, right, you may start to see people thinking about putting more money to work, right? So I was in Hong Kong and I was talking to some people out there. They never questioned me about politics in Asia, in Southeast Asia.
It's business as usual.
Because they know that the biggest risk out there is the geopolitical tension with China or Taiwan. And they are asking me, look, can I get exposure outside of China?
So yeah,
of course. Southeast Asia is one of them, right?
Yeah.
I said, tell me more, right? You're very bullish on Vietnam. Tell me more about Vietnam. You know, you like Indonesia as well. It's a growing economy. Tell me more. You know, so people don't just think about politics in isolation. They think about it as a total basket, right? And you calculate your risk premium. The currency is one barometer of that, right? And then, of course, if you've got all the other policy issues, which, like I said earlier on, right, no country that I invest in is never going to have zero political risk. But then you may navigate it by, you know, asset location, diversification, and so forth, good quality companies, right?
Okay, let's pull back the conversation to Malaysia. We're looking at strong GDP growth for Malaysia for this year, coming back on a very strong number as well, 8%+. We're looking at accommodative monetary policy. You're not the first person to say that Bank Negara might hold, but then again, you know, there's that slight possibility as well. We're looking at greater policy clarity coming in from Budget 2023 that was presented by the Finance Minister / Prime Minister back in February. However, the FBM KLCI has underperformed, but it does provide some great bargains, as you mentioned earlier. So what would be the outlook for Malaysia going forward, and how do you think that investors should look at when it comes to investing, not just domestically, but across the board as well?
I think, like I said earlier on, right, Malaysia basically, in a world where there's a lot more capital going into, for example, in China, for example, it gets lost into that midst of the confusion, right? Mm. And of course, politics is one of them, right? Mm. But I think, as I said previously before as well, right, is that if we move away from the risk premium story of Malaysia to one where we start to look under the hood, where you think about all the growth stuff that we talked about earlier on, you know, whether EMS, company, technology, and so forth, I think you've got a very compelling story. It is really a stock picker's market. Right. So when I look at my funds, for example, I'm not doing any sales here, right? The small cap funds that we have are up high single digits, right? Our mid cap funds are up by also mid single digits, right? In the environment, for example, it's -4.
Yeah.
So if you navigate away from all this large debt stuff, which are generally driven by the banks, right? And if you take a view that the banks have started to peak in terms of rate hikes, then of course earnings will be back end loaded rather than front end loaded, right? So in other words, what we're trying to say here is that, you know, you want to avoid those large cap companies out there and invest in the small mid cap space, which have growth and also a certain amount of income. Now, we're not saying that we're going to populate all our portfolios with small cap stocks, because that's pretty dangerous and that's not real risk management, right? But what I'm trying to say here is that I think there are opportunities, right? And especially in an environment where you think they may potentially in the next 12 months of a global rate cut scenario, then there are opportunities, for example, in a lot of other sectors as well, right? For example, the REIT sector. Right, in Malaysia or in the region as well, right?
Singapore REITs actually, yeah.
Yeah,
that would be
right?
interesting. Yeah.
That'd be interesting, right? It's bombed out, right?
Yeah. Anyway,
you know, so those are the kind of things that we're looking at as well, you know.
If you stretch the timeline back to 2 decades, 3 decades, you've been in the market for quite some time.
Yeah.
Is this a peculiar time for you to experience, or is this just one of those, just many of the same stories being told differently?
This is not 98. This is not 08. Yes, we have a recession. But this is a very peculiar market where we've had a huge amounts of rate hikes over the last 12 months. That has to taper off at some point. Now, how much? I don't know for now. It's data dependent. But my view is very, very simple. The macroeconomy globally is in a healthy space. Malaysia is one of them as well, like you rightly said just now. And then when you think along those lines, you've got to pick your bets where you want to be in an environment that you can take advantage of a potential rate cut or pause in the market, which tells you at the end of the day why people are buying technology companies. Because this is a sector where I think it will continue to grow for multi-decades to come. Mm. Right? People talk about ChatGPT, talk about AI, and the list goes on. These are mega trends that are not going to go away. Right, and that's why Malaysia is in the forefront of this. And that's one of the reasons why I think the FDIs from China and all the rest of the other FDIs that we talk about from MNCs coming into Southeast Asia and Malaysia are going to continue to sprout and grow the ecosystem and so forth. Right, so I'm pretty bullish if you take a much longer term view. But in the short term, we still have issues. You know, execution of politics is one of them. The government needs to show what they can do. Right, maybe after the elections and so forth.
Yeah.
You know,
it'll be a good referendum for them actually.
Yeah, so once we move away from all these political issues, I think people will start refocusing on fundamentals. You know.
Final word before we conclude our conversation?
Well, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, market's going to be still choppy. Economy is probably going to be in, not Malaysia, but in developed markets, may go into recession, especially the US. But, you know, in our view, you've got to still continue to invest. Our view is very simple. Overweight equities, overweight fixed income, particularly fixed income in this environment where you get higher yields, and basically don't hold your cash under the bed because you're not.
I mean that's the anxiety. You're not gonna beat inflation
by doing that.
No, but especially retail investors. That's the reaction right now.
Yeah.
And the idea here is to practice that investment discipline.
Yep.
Thank you very much. That was Patrick Chang, the Chief Investment Officer of Principal Southeast Asia. If you want to learn more, head off to their website. There's a lot of resources that can be found over at Principal Southeast Asia and their website there. Of course, you can head off to astroawani.com and look at my past conversations with Patrick. It's pretty much spot on, Patrick. My name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.